Inside Chicago Government. ChiGov.com.
Welcome to another in a series of interviews with Ben Jurofsky. I'm Dave Gloetz. Ben writes on government and politics for the Chicago Reader. And it's that special time of year for you and me, Ben. Can you guess what that is?
It's an anniversary.
The eighth year.
Wow, man. You're the only one getting younger.
That's my deal with Satan.
Oh, okay. Would that be the governor or the mayor? No, just kidding. Happy anniversary. I like your t-shirt. We'll have a video. Can we have a close-up on Dave's t-shirt?
You know, I'm thinking in another 8 years, what we'll have is holograms. So will okay. We actually be sitting in our listeners' room with them or in their car or wherever they're listening to us.
So happy anniversary, Dave. And thank you, Kevin Lamb, wherever you are out there. You were the one who brokered this deal.
Shout out to Kevin.
Yeah, the great Kevin Lamb.
Special K. Well, today we're talking about the city budget. Because on October 28th, the city council approved and a vote of 35 to 15.
Well, that's an astonishment. Oh, my God. They voted with the mayor.
They voted on two things. One was a property tax increase of $543 million, which will take effect over 4 years.
Okay.
That package also includes about $200 million more in other taxes and fees. Then in a separate vote, the council approved 36 to 14, the mayor's proposed 2016 budget.
Yeah.
So the council had separate votes on the new budget and on this revenue package. How does this compare to past years?
I believe it's always a separate vote, but I'm not sure if I can't remember. I always thought like the more appropriations or levy hikes or whatever there were, the more literal votes there were. Like there was a separate line item for a levy on school construction. So I thought that would require its own vote. Apparently, it was rolled into the other levy vote.
Yeah, there's happen to have the ordinance here. There's something like 19 or 20 different articles of things that they increased fees and taxes on.
Oh, my God. Yeah, there's many different things. Again, I've already forgotten them. I've been so obsessed with the fight between Rahm and Rauner that I've forgotten the budget battle.
We should say, quote, fight, unquote.
Yes. I only found one person in the city of Chicago who believes that the fight is legitimate, and he is a close mayoral backer, and he was inebriated when he told me that.
So he might have been lying.
Yeah, he might have been lying. Well, I'm sure he wasn't telling the truth. Whether that counts as a lie is a whole other discussion. Anyway, back to your point. Yes, they raise. There's the garbage fee for the first time ever. We'll have to pay a separate fee to have our garbage collected as opposed to having it come out of our general property taxes.
And some aldermen were making lots of trash talk about that.
Dave will be appearing at Zanies this weekend. Yeah, it was a classic Chicago budget where they hit us up with fees and fines and property tax hikes while overlooking any new significant sources of revenue, such as the one I always champion, a financial transaction tax or the legalization of marijuana and taxing of that. So Mayor Rahm is just obviously dedicated to stumbling down the same road that his predecessor, Mayor Daley, stumbled down.
Well, speaking of other sources of revenue, in the months leading up to the passage of the mayor's tax and fee increases and his 2016 budget, the city council's Progressive Reform Caucus had created its own list of suggestions, which didn't include legalizing and taxing marijuana.
Did not.
Did not.
Yeah, of course. That's even too radical for the progressives.
They weren't high enough.
Yeah.
I have the, happen to have here the document showing the proactive options for municipal revenue generation. They're good at multisyllabic titles here. And it included things like, surprise, tax increment financing reform, expanding the city's sales tax to services like professional services, better collection of unpaid fines, stormwater stress tax, which is interesting.
Interesting concept by Alderman Rosa,
yeah. The caucus had estimated that its proposals would reduce costs or generate revenue to the tune of about $2.7 billion minimum annually if all were implemented. Here's what the caucus's chair, 32nd Ward Alderman Scott Wagespach, speaking last month at a public forum about how the caucus acted on its proposals, said.
It's time for us to really get serious about looking for other ways to raise the revenue that we need to fix our pension problems and to make sure that our city budgets are solvent. We're also looking for ways to reduce spending in ways that doesn't hurt basic services and make sure that we have the staff available to get the job done. So the Progressive Caucus over the summer met with the mayor and his staff three times. we've worked very seriously this summer to find as many revenue options as we could. We found options that generate revenue in a fair and equitable manner and protect the wallets of regular Chicagoans while asking the wealthiest among us to help us change the way that we fund our city.
So despite all the caucus's work on these revenue ideas, the revenue package passed by the city council included small parts of only a couple of the proposals. So nowhere near the $2.7 billion. So it was things like the parking ticket amnesty and requiring chauffeur licenses for the rideshare drivers. So are these 11 aldermen in the caucus spinning their wheels or what?
It's never a complete waste of time, Dave, because if I were to say that, then I would just say everything I've done for my entire professional career is just a waste of time, which I'm sure there are some people out there who might agree with. We are all sort of generally what's known as the loyal opposition, I guess.
We're committed is what
you mean. And so if we pound the drum long enough, sooner or later, whoever is in power, be it Daley or Emanuel, will steal our ideas because he will have no alternative. So I never would say it's a waste. I always believe as long as we have these First Amendment rights to speak out, we should exercise them. And I encourage everybody to do so. So I would not say it's a waste of time. I would say that the form of government we have enables autocrats to do whatever they want. And that would describe, I think you would agree, Mayor Rahm and Mayor Daley before him. So they are, on principle, not going to do what Scott Wagasback suggests because they can't stand Scott Wagasback for not bowing down to them when they enter the room and complimenting them on the brilliance of their budget handling. So I wouldn't call him wasting his time, but it's very unlikely for an independent alderman to get his or her idea publicly supported by the mayor.
This bowing down phenomenon perhaps explains why only 5 of the 11 caucus members voted no on the mayor's package of tax and fee increases. And the ones who voted yes, Fifth Ward Alderman Leslie Hairston, Rod Sawyer of the 6th, Tony Folks of the 16th, Rick Munoz of the 22nd, Nick Spizzato of the 38th, and finally, John Arena of the 45th. These are all the aldermen that voted for the added revenues that the mayor backed. Again, they are all in the Progressive Caucus, most of whose suggestions did not get implemented. So any surprises there of those guys?
Yeah, I was surprised that Arena voted for the budget. I haven't talked to him since the budget, so I don't know what his stated reason is.
He might be hiding.
He's hiding. I don't know. I'm just thinking about it. Most of that property tax hike is going to fund the obligations we have to the police and fire.
Pensions.
Pensions. And there's a lot of police and firefighters in John Arena's ward.
And Spizzato. Former firefighter.
Yeah. So I would guess that has something to do, whether he would admit it or not, with why he made that practical decision. Again, look, it takes 26 votes to pass a tax hike and pass a budget. So he's got the 26. He doesn't even have to lobby hard for them. There's going to be 26. There's all sorts of political thought that you have to calibrate before you make the decision. Will I be the symbolic no vote? Will I vote no? And what are the political gains of voting no as opposed to the risks of upsetting a very temperamental mayor who's not above seeking revenge for such votes, for such acts of disobedience? You know, each alderman has to factor those kinds of things in. And then maybe there's some sweeteners from the mayor's office that we don't know about, park money or street improvement money or money for a favorite project or maybe jobs for a nephew. You know, there's all sorts of things we don't know about that the mayor can deliver to an alderman to win over a vote.
So it makes me wonder about the meaning of their membership in the, quote, progressive, unquote, reform caucus. Like perhaps the caucus should have an annual set of benchmarks that they check to see.
That's a valid point. And the larger the progressive caucus grows, the less meaningful membership in that caucus becomes, if you think about it.
And it was a big deal that some of these new aldermen who were elected in this last election joined and swelled the ranks of the caucus.
Now, some of those aldermen who voted no, for instance, Sue Garza and Alderman Rosa from the 35th Ward, campaigned as progressives. And as part of their campaign pitch said, I will join the progressive caucus. Other than the aldermen who voted no, it's a very confusing and surprising vote. the aforementioned Mr. Lamb, who brought us together many years ago, is now chief of staff for Millie Santiago, a rookie alderman in the 31st Ward, and she voted no. So either she overruled the counsel of Kevin, who was, I'm sure, urging her to vote. Yeah, I'm just teasing Kevin here. I have no idea what role Kevin played in that, but it's interesting that she voted no. She's not a member of the Progressive Caucus. She has never been a strong opponent of Mayor Rahm in the past, speaking out against his programs, but she voted no. And then in the 36th Ward, the alderman voted no.
Villegas.
Yeah, so it seems like Louis Arroyo is the state rep out there. His alderman, his allies voted no. And
who Mr. Lamb also used to work for.
That is correct, the great Kevin Lamb. He's getting a lot of airtime on the show. And
send that check, Kevin.
Yes, also a Packer fan. He tries to keep that concealed. He doesn't want people to know that.
No one's listening.
I know. So it's very odd alignment, never seen anything like it. And then, of course, there were some Lakefront, North Lakefront aldermen, and the joke is they got the permission of the mayor to vote no.
There were a couple things that raised the hackles of many of the citizens, you know, the pitchforks out, namely the garbage fee and allowing more leeway for the rideshare companies.
Now, when you look at, in particular, what raised the hackles, and that's a great term, of Northside aldermen, and this is where it gets really insidious and duplicitous and gets into the whole notion of Rahm's fight with Rauner. Alleged fight with Rauner. But one of the proposals Rahm had, he was this big tax hike. He said he was going to try to make it a more progressive tax by sheltering low-income areas from the blow with a greater homeowner's exemption, which is essentially home protection that limits the amount a homeowner pays in property taxes.
Which he can promise but can't deliver because the state has to do it.
Right, the state has to do it. So he made a promise that was undeliverable. He knew it was undeliverable at the time. It didn't stop him from making the promise, much like how he's going to balance the school budget with $480 million of money from the state that both Madigan and Rauner are linked together saying you're not going to get. So there's so much deceit in a budget spectacle. I'm almost tired of writing about them because it's really just a spectacle. It's just a show. But had that expanded homeowner's exemption passed, that would force greater pressure on relatively wealthy Northside wards that would not be protected with that exemption to pay a greater share of the increase. And so Brendan Riley, I'm thinking about, of the 42nd Ward, broke ranks from the mayor to vote no. I believe Harry Osterman of the 48th Ward broke ranks from the mayor to vote no. Deborah Silverstein, I think, the 50th voted no.
She did.
Kappelman and Tunney, it was too much. They thought about it. And they go, no, I don't want to. That's too scary. Oh, no, Mr. Mayor, I can't go.
They'll start calling me progressive.
Yeah, right? Oh, my God, I'm nervous. They got nervous. And, you know, knees buckled. And in the end, they voted yes. So that's three no votes from, and of course, Joe Moore goes along with whatever the mayor says these days. Joe.
We don't have to go there.
We'll go with Joe. That's three no votes. So it's an unusual coalition. They all had their reasons, individual reasons. Didn't really amount to much in terms of like an organized movement to force the mayor to make any kind of significant concession. I think the greatest concession he made was to give some kind of senior citizen allowance on the garbage tax, which is probably something we wanted to do anyway. So,
and I mentioned earlier how the Progressive Reform Caucus had proposed a reform of tax increment financing. And I want to recall that you said in one of our recent interviews that Chicago Public Schools, or CPS, lost over $1 billion to tax increment financing in the last 5 years. And for the uninitiated, tax increment financing is?
A property tax surcharge that the city puts on top of the property tax bills you knowingly pay to the various entities that you support, like the schools, the parks, etc. So it's a tax hike. As far as I'm concerned, that's all I'm going to say about TIFs. They're tax hikes, and the money is then sent off to bank accounts controlled by the mayor.
And that money would otherwise go to taxing bodies that you'd
like
see listed on your tax bill, such as the Chicago Public Schools, the Chicago Park District.
So they raise your taxes without telling you they're raising your taxes, and they tell you that the money that you're spending is going to the public schools, when in fact it's not going to the public schools. It's getting sent to another fund. And then when you say you're diverting money from the schools to another fund, they say, no, it's not a diversion, it's something else.
Roughly half of a property taxpayer's bill goes to Chicago Public Schools. The rest of it,
half, yeah.
Rest of it goes to Chicago Park District, libraries, water reclamation,
Cook County,
and all the other taxing bodies. So you have claimed, as I said, that that results in hundreds of million dollars a year being diverted away from schools, so the schools are losing money.
Yes.
Your position was refuted by Chicago Budget Director Alexandra Holt.
There's a shock.
In an October 8th appearance on Chicago Newsroom. Let's listen to a question from host Ken Davis and Holt's response.
Think about what the schools could have done with all that money that has been robbed from them over the last 10 or 15 years from the TIF program. We wouldn't be needing the TIF program to go in there and replace the windows and stuff like that if they just had had the money from the beginning.
Well, guess what? They're property tax capped. They can't raise their property taxes to equal the value of the dollars that have come out of the TIF. Mm-hmm. This is one of these things about the nature of our property tax system. And CPS can't just raise their property taxes. So if you hadn't put that value in the TIFs, they couldn't have necessarily captured it. There's some small cases in which they could, but most of the value that you've seen is growth in value on existing properties. They're not able to capture that because state law says they can't. So you need to think about that factor and know that they wouldn't have necessarily been able to pull those dollars in, and they wouldn't have been able to invest them in, say, art teachers or gym teachers or the things that they have been investing in with the surplus that they've received over the last 4 years. The other thing is there is a capital need at CPS, significant capital needs.
Awesome.
We've got both, overcrowding in some schools. We've got other schools with roof issues. We've got other schools that need ADA accessible bathrooms for kids that go to the school. And those are things that TIF invests in and actually provides CPS with an additional source of revenue to make those repairs. It's definitely a source of capital funding for CPS. It's a source of capital funding for the city. It's a source of capital funding for the parks. All of those things augmenting the cities and the parks and CPS's regular capital budget. You know, for the city, it's a little different. We're not property tax capped in the same way that CPS is. So theoretically, if TIFs hadn't existed, we would have been able to capture all that growth over time. But it's not something, when you look at somebody like CPS, not something they would have been able to do.
That's not true. It's not true on a couple levels. I had to deal with this with Greg Hines, your good friend who's a columnist for the Chicago Cranes, who made the mistake of listening to what people like Alex Holt told him and then went public with it very defiantly and only to have to retreat because it's just not true.
Holt seems to be saying that the amount by which the Board of Ed can raise taxes is capped. But as I understand it, any taxing body such as the Board of Education can specify only the levy, in other words, the amount of money that it seeks from the taxes. It's a nuance, right? You can't raise tax, it could raise its levy.
Yeah, levy being the amount of tax dollars you're spending, property tax dollars, any taxing body is spent.
If so, the thing that the state law caps is how much the Board of Ed can increase the levy each year. Is that correct?
That is correct. The amount that they're spending.
So let's get a little further into the weeds here to dissect whether she's actually correct. The rate at which property is taxed is essentially the levy amount divided by the amount of combined assessed values of all the properties. That's an oversimplification. I'm not including things like exemptions and stuff like that.
Okay, the way I always say it is the amount you pay in taxes is the value of your property multiplied by the tax rate. And the tax rate is determined by the levy and the amount of property that there is to be taxed in the whole body. So the example I always give, if the schools determine that they want to spend $100 in a school year and there's $1,000 of property to tax, then the tax rate they would figure out to be 10%. So that's how tax rates determine, and that's the relationship between a tax rate, property value, and the levy.
Got it. Likewise, if a bunch more assessed property becomes available, as in the case of a TIF district expiring, the Board of Ed can't get any more dollars from that property than to the limit of the levy.
That is incorrect.
It is not
correct. The law specifically allows for all of the property to be taxed that had been kept away from the Board of Education in a TIF district. That's the whole purpose of the TIF program. The purpose of the TIF program is to take undervalued land, land that's vacant, let's say, and give it a subsidy that, but for that subsidy, the land would not be developed. So you give the developer the subsidy, he develops his land, the property starts paying more in taxes. It would penalize the city if you would say, you can't use that new tax, that new value of the property. It would penalize the city, say, that's off limits. The whole point of the program is to encourage cities to prudently invest their tax dollars in development deals that would grow their tax base. That's the whole purpose of the program. program has been turned upside down by coming this general slush fund to pay for everything and anything that the mayor needs. But the purpose of the program, the reason it was originally designed, was to grow the tax base by subsidizing developments in blighted, poor communities that, but for those subsidies, would not be developed.
But help me out here with this levy aspect. The levy is established by the taxing body. They submit it to the county clerk. So let's say it's $1 million. You know, like the Board of Ed is saying, this is really hypothetical. $1 million is what we need for the coming tax year, and that's what we're going to spend from property taxes. So we get halfway through a year, and a tax increment financing district expires. You're saying that that property in there now gets to be taxed. That money that wasn't given to the taxing body now is available to be given.
That is correct.
But that would increase the amount that they get over and above what the levy was established.
That's because the law allows taxing bodies to go beyond the cap when it's land that was in a TIF district. The TIF district is exempt.
It specifically says that.
Yes, it's in the state. I've written about this several times. This, of course, was that great debate I had with the immortal Greg Hines.
So that's where Holt is specifically wrong, because she's missing that fact of this exempt nature of the TIF district set aside.
Yes. She's very calculated in how wrong she is. This is an old argument that Pat O'Connor sort of mastered. That's an alderman in the 40th Ward. For instance, if you kept all the TIF districts in Chicago where they are, then you could not use them to further fund your schools without going beyond the levy. But if you got rid of the TIF districts, if you said, you know what, this is a convoluted, unfair, confusing system that forces people to pay more money in taxes that we're telling them they're paying for the schools, and that it would be more open, transparent, honest, fair, and smart to get rid of them and just have the money pouring into our coffers so that we can see how it's distributed, then all that money would go to the schools. So the schools would have a lot more money. What was it last year? $379 million,
something like that.
Yeah, $400 million. It'll be even more this year because they're raising the rates. The mayor's people don't want voters to focus on that because they would rather starve the schools of this money and keep it for their own ends. And the schools lose out on the deal. And that's why in suburban districts where you have separate entities, the school board is its own entity, and the administrator, the mayor, is separate. The mayor doesn't control the school board, where there is something of a debate, where the school board will say to the mayor, if we're going to agree to this TIF, you have to compensate us somehow. So how are you going to compensate us? We want guarantees that the TIF will dissolve as soon as the project is over, or maybe your budget will pay for our janitorial needs, or there's some kinds of exchanges that go on.
So Ben, do you think that Ms. Holt is misguided or deceiving?
Oh my God. I cannot comment on what's going on in the inner workings of anyone's mind that I don't know. I can tell you this, the city of Chicago has been deceitful about the TIF program almost from the moment they enacted the first TIF. Well, no, I would say that Harold Washington got an A for truthfulness. Mayor Daley got an F, and it's been F ever since. The great Kennedy Davis invited me to come on his show the week after he had Alex Holt on.
But you didn't talk about this point.
No. What we talked about was the grudging admission by Alex Holt on that show that TIFs raise taxes. Then she went to say, well, it's not a lot of taxes, which I found an astounding statement since in the last budget, I think it was like $380 million worth of taxes. So since when is $380 million not a lot of taxes? If you go read the city's brochures that they disseminate at public hearings when they're trying to convince the population that it's a good idea to create a TIF, one of the first statements they say is TIFs do not raise your property tax. They're not property tax hikes. So again, they're continually to mislead the public. I believe the public kind of understands that they're being misled on this issue. The willingness to fight it is a whole other issue. But no, that's just grossly wrong to say that there would be no more money for the schools if the TIFs were gone, because the whole purpose of the program is to grow the tax base for the public schools.
The mayor recently said something that's sort of opposite of the motivation you ascribed to him.
Oh, there's astounding.
It's been pretty widely reported that included in the recently passed revenue package that the city council passed is a $45 million property tax increase to fund Chicago Public Schools construction. Let's listen to how Mayor Rahm Emanuel described it in his September 22nd budget speech.
Back in 2003, the legislature in Springfield gave Chicago the right to levy a special property tax to help with school modernization. Yet in all those intervening years, the city never followed through. Today, in Chicago, the place we call home, in our schools, it is so overcrowded. We have classes where children are learning in stairwells, they are learning in hallways, and sometimes even in converted closets. We, as a city, are better than that. I have been, and you have been, to schools that are so overcrowded, the hallway is a lunchroom. And I have also seen, and you have also seen, the difference a new modern addition makes to a child's education. Every one of us. So along with the city budget, we propose to start levying a special property tax for school modernization, to bring thousands of Chicago students out of the closet and into the daylight. Once this levy is enacted, it will enable us as a city to end school overcrowding in Chicago in the coming years. It will also enable us to finish the job in making sure that every classroom, in every school, in every neighborhood is fully air conditioning, something the city's been debating since 1963.
The Board of Ed is essentially getting an additional levy for construction. Why don't you think they did this before?
I don't know. I can only speculate. Mayor Daley was particularly obsessed with perpetrating the notion that he wasn't raising property taxes, even though, of course, every year he was through the TIFs. And he was also raising them, the levy, every year with the Board of Education. That would be my best answer.
Well, if I was Mayor Daley or Mayor Emanuel, it might be to my best advantage if when I create the levy, I don't have any of it carved out for a special purpose so I can have maximum flexibility. Where this particular amount is just like, it's all got to be towards construction.
Yeah, but again, you know how they do it with budgets. So if you have a new source of money that's only for construction, then you can take money that had already been used for construction in another part of the budget and use it for something else. I mean, there's ways that clever budget makers like Alex Holt could shift things around. That's what they do. That's their job.
Many aldermen wanted to see a list of the planned construction projects, which the board has not delivered. But however, the Tribune reported on October 26th that the mayor has said that rather than simply spend the $45 million on construction, it's likely that CPS will use the money as a basis for issuing bonds.
Yes.
So essentially borrowing money for capital improvements. Yeah. As Amy Goodman would say, your response.
I remember when I first read the mayor's remarks, and I just found them so bizarre coming from Mayor Emanuel. He just closed 50 schools. I mean, it's like, they just make this stuff up as they go along. So suddenly he's passionately pleading on behalf of kids in overcrowded schools after he just closed 50 schools because we're underutilized and there's a fight going on right now whether we can afford to open new charter schools, whether he should open, you know, he was fighting opening a new diet school. So all of a sudden, he's invoking this image of kids in closets and in hallways.
Dark closets and dark hallways.
To create a fund that now he's suddenly saying, well, I'm not sure how I'm going to spend the money. The cynic in me thinks that he's just going to use the money for other things. The lack of specificity, as always, is a little disconcerting. And all of a sudden, they're using it for air conditioning. I mean, if you recall, he mocked the notion that we even needed air conditioning. I don't know if you remember this. The air conditioning fight emerged from the teacher strike of 2012. I don't know what he's going to use the money for. One of the bizarre little twists of Barbara Bird Bennett's scandal is that suddenly aldermen are saying, well, we don't trust the Board of Education to spend this money wisely, Mr. Mayor, so we want you to be in charge of the spending of the money, which is like, are you kidding me? He's in charge of the Board of Education.
Written into the ordinance that passed it was this requirement The approval is conditioned upon periodic reporting to the Chicago City Council by suitable representatives of the Board of Education regarding expenditures planned using funds received pursuant to the above levy. The City Council may, by resolution, file objections. It just says objections to any such proposed expenditures, which is not to say it could block it.
It could just say file. And I don't even know what to say to that.
It's going to be so fun absurd. To see.
Okay, let's say Scott Wagensback wanted to propose a resolution which would object to some expenditure. If Mayor Rahm didn't want that resolution to pass, he'd have it buried in committee.
I'm afraid that's all we have time for. Ben, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you, David.
Listeners, we always welcome your questions and comments and suggestions for future interviews. You can get those to us via email, contact@shygov.com. I'm Dave Gloet. Thanks for listening. Síguela, 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 vida caminando.